All right. Welcome to Dr. Imposter. I'm your co-host, Austin White.
And I'm Kamau Mathias.
And today we have a very special guest joining us, a man who needs no introduction. Just kidding. We should give him an introduction. Weston Wong. He is a fourth-year medical student at Rocky Vista University, and he is very interesting and interested in psychiatry.
Wow, thank
and
you.
He's very tall. We're getting your best character. We're getting your just great characteristics up front.
I'd describe him as taller than you expect.
How tall does one expect me to be?
What did you think, Austin? How tall did you think he was?
I don't know, like less than 6 foot, but like more than 5'8". So somewhere in that sweet spot.
Okay.
I don't know. Adam, who we had on last episode, was also taller than I'd expect.
Yeah, that's what happens when your like first 2 years are on Zoom in medical school.
When you're just when you're just a, you know, a bust.
Yeah, just a static picture. But no, I am 6 foot
really does
four.
Just mess with your perception of people. You're 6 foot four?
I am 6'4" if I'm standing up straight right in the morning. I don't know how tall I am in like the afternoon after I've been like sitting like a shrimp all day.
And then just feeling defeated from a hard day's work.
Feeling the weight of the world.
Yeah, that is definitely me every afternoon.
Oh, y'all are feeling defeated at the end of the day?
No, never.
Not be very dedicated to your career because I feel energized.
Just the rare occurrence when I feel defeated.
Oh, okay. Just like every 24 hours or so.
Correct.
Yeah, like as a treat.
Yeah, Weston, how would you, besides telling us your height, how would you introduce yourself?
My name is Weston. I am from Utah. Got my undergrad degree in public health. And yeah, I'm applying to psychiatry residency in a couple of weeks, which is actually pretty wild that we are at that stage in our life.
Yeah. Have you finished up with like at your application, or are you still polishing it off?
Yesterday, I finally wrote my 10 experiences that I told myself I'd been working on for the last, you know, few months. So I still got some work on it. And then I'm still harassing, I don't know if that's the right word, reminding my letter writers.
No, I think harassing is
persistently encouraging.
I have one uploaded so far. So, you know, we're doing great.
Hey, you know, it's like 33%.
I understand, you know, they always tell medical students when you ask your preceptors for letters of recommendation or whatever, you know, like understand that, you know, they're busy and, you know, they have a lot going on. And so, you know, not to expect, you know, to get the letter immediately after asking, but I don't think letter writers, I think doctors forget how stressful it is waiting for a letter of recommendation. Like it's terrible. It's awful.
Yeah. And I've been, you know, sending the reminder texts every few weeks, like, hey, if you still can, that would be awesome. Let me know if you need anything. I gave you everything you needed, but let me know.
I don't know what else I could do for you, but.
I just imagine myself as like Piglet from Winnie the Pooh, just like approaching them, like, if you could, I would really appreciate the letter. I'm sorry to bother you. I'll go hide. I'll throw myself in a dumpster.
And I wonder too, like, how much are programs, like, how much weight do they put on these? Or at this point, is it just a formality?
Yeah, it's like just get it done.
Great question. I think it's heavily specialty dependent. Or at least that's what I tell myself when I don't know the answer to something. Because it's like, I'm only
so
looking at it from the context of family med.
So true, yeah. But you're probably right.
Yeah, it's I also think it's probably one of those things where it's like, you know, just the average letter like may or may not mean much, but a really good letter could go a long way, no matter whoever it's written by. Like a really good letter probably means a lot. The average letter is just like whatever, you know. But I don't know.
If that's only one question. Day we could read our letters, that would be really nice.
Oh,
I know, right?
I know. My ego needs that. I need.
Yeah, to how much of a difference letters. Do you think it makes if you choose not to waive that right to see your letters? Like, do you think that's like, oh, well, we can't take this person because they didn't waive their right? Or do you think they actually care?
I don't know. And I feel like it's just, I feel like that also is a formality. Like, you know, you're not going to be able to read the letter, but we just need you to acknowledge that you're not going to read the letter.
Right.
Like, I've heard of some preceptors asking the student to write the letter of recommendation for themselves and then to just send it to them to get rubber stamped.
Yeah.
I heard about this.
Rumor has it.
Just heard about it. Yeah.
I had a letter writer in undergrad when I was applying to med school who wrote my letter. And then he was like, you know, when you fill it out, make sure you say you're waiving your right. But I will email the letter to you because I want you to send it to your mom so that your mom knows what kind of person you are now. I was like, oh,
so nice.
Cute.
Wow. That's what should happen.
Yeah, I can't remember if I was just about to say, I can't remember if I actually sent it to my mom.
Well, I think you should to let your mom know who you were 4 to 5 years ago.
Who I was that long ago. Like, mom, I'm nothing like that person now. I'm a piece of crap now. Just kidding.
I can't believe it was that long ago that we were applying to medical school.
Yeah, seems fake.
I know.
Seriously.
It was like a time, I feel like, especially with the pandemic, it was like a time warp the last, whatever, 4 or 5 years since applying.
Like, yeah, I feel like applying and the first several years of med school, you know, just chew you up and you're just okay with it because that's what you signed up for. And then right now, I think we're towards the beginning of being spat out only to be eaten by residency. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Right. So, Weston, what you are applying to psychiatry, correct?
I am. That is correct.
And how is it kind of in your rotations and your sub internship rotations? How is like kind of your experience with residency programs been?
It's been good. I think, you know, away audition rotations, whatever you want to call them. I think it's a great opportunity to see if you and the program are a good fit for each other. I think one of mine that I've done, I went into it not expecting anything really, but I had an awesome time, got along well with the residents. The attendings were awesome. I learned a ton. And I think we're a good fit for each other. At least that's what they told me. So, you know, hopefully that turns out. But then it's interesting because I go to another program and again, going with no expectations, but I'm kind of comparing it to the one I just did. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll just say it's a good opportunity to see if you and the program are a good fit for each other because some of us and some programs fit better than others. And it's a good experience to say that, but also at the same time, I'm glad I only did two, you know, part of me was like, oh, I wish I could do six, you know, like I originally had planned, but away rotations are kind of exhausting.
For sure. Yeah. It's in the title, like audition rotation, is it? It is in the title, like you are auditioning. And so there is this like sense, like I have to put my absolute best self forward every single day, you know, which I don't think people like just go about their daily life, you know, trying to be crappy workers or anything like that. But it's just like this hyper fixation on presenting your best self every single day. And you're right. It is very exhausting. And you're like, if you're traveling, like just
oh yeah,
traveling is not super fun when you're just gone for 2 weeks or 4 weeks at a time.
Yeah. And, you know, by the time you're finishing up, I'm lucky I was able to come home to my bed. That was the thing I was most excited for. I was like, I want my bed and I want my pillows. So I can't imagine doing that for like more time.
Hey, pro tip, bring your pillow with you.
I did. But okay. I feel like it's the bed pillow combo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the firmness of the mattress underneath your pillow that you like. And so you buy your pillow according to the firmness of your mattress.
There's just so many variables.
It's like wearing sweatpants with a dress shirt. It's just like it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
But it might work for virtual interviews.
No comment.
if any program directors are listening, I will be wearing actual pants during my interview.
I likely will be wearing actual pants. I can't confidently say if those pants will be matching what I'm wearing as a shirt, but
yeah, I think the pants really set the tone for the interview. You know how like I used to work at a call center and they have this saying like dial with a smile, like to smile as you're answering because it comes through in your voice. I think the fact that you're wearing pants also comes through in your voice. Wouldn't you agree?
I haven't really experimented with that, so I will let you know.
Okay.
But also, I would love to hear your customer service voice.
Yeah, I was thinking. I'm like, I know Austin very well, but I don't think I know customer service Austin very well.
So here's the thing: customer service Austin doesn't exist, and that is why I only lasted 2.5 weeks at that job.
Oh. Do you feel like
I just wasn't a good culture fit?
Real. Do you feel like your 2.5 weeks doing that helped in your medical education and experience at all?
I got really good at a scale of 1 to 5 surveys, which came to bear in my like research in med school. I learned what a survey is, you know.
Nice.
Because I would call people and I would ask them how their most recent dealer visit at their local Honda dealer was and what services they had done.
Wow.
And let me tell you, they're always happy to hear me. They're always happy to hear from me.
That is riveting.
Just like, hey, yeah, neither of us want to be on this phone call, actually, but I'm getting paid $750. And
nice. Nice.
Back to talking about residency and kind of sub eyes and auditions and all that. For each of you, and we're not speaking specifically, but more on general terms, what are some of the red flags that you have when you are looking at a residency or talking to a program?
I think one thing for me is how the residents interact with each other and their faculty and off of that, how they then talk about their fellow residents and their faculty. Because I think, I mean, it goes without saying that residency is going to be super hard. Like it's going to chew you up and you will be tired and you will be kind of mentally and physically drained. Like it's going to be hard. Like that's just a fact. No matter what specialty you go into, competitive or non-competitive, but if you have an environment and system around you where residents are supportive, and you have residents that get along with faculty and you have faculty members, that build residents up and offer constructive and helpful advice. And, you know, there's just the best way to say it is just good vibes. If the residency has good vibes, then your experience will be much better. So that's like, I think that's the one thing that I look for. I don't know about everyone else.
I think part of this too is going to be specialty dependent and specific. also individually, what each individual is looking for. Cause like I've been talking to friends who are applying family med, and some of them really want a lot of OB experience. Some of them don't really care to get a lot of OB experience. And so I think you have, within your specialty, you have to identify what's important to you, going through that. So I totally agree with the good vibes. I want to make sure that residents seem happy. You know, I have been around residents that are miserable, and that definitely affects the whole team. And especially if the whole team is kind of not happy, then it's just not like the hours drag on. Whereas when everyone's, you know, vibing well with each other, they're happy, they know things about each other, I think time just kind of flies by. I think it's also kind of telling, do residents hang out with each other outside of work? I'm not saying, you know, you have to be best friends with your coworkers or anything, because that's definitely not the case. But I think that also speaks to, yeah, how well does everyone get along with each other? In my conversations with residents, I always ask, you know, has there been something that's needed addressing with attendings or, you know, residency leadership? How has that gone? What's that process like? And I think that's also going to depend program by program, because some programs have been around for a long time and their ways are set, and that's just how it's going to be. And I found more so the newer programs are very open to changes and being flexible. And I think that's something I appreciate, is that the program is learning and growing along with the residents.
I would agree with that, especially kind of that last thing you said, with kind of the newer programs being more flexible. Whereas like maybe some of the older programs, more academic based programs, are kind of like on tracks, like on rails, and it's really hard to change direction. And that's kind of why I'm mainly looking at community programs, I think, is because I feel like they're more likely to incorporate resident feedback. One red flag that I have is the way that residents talk about their faculty, especially their program director. Because like at residency fairs, like you'll ask, and either it's quick and they'll light up and be like, our program director is awesome, you know, they do this, that. Like I feel like I have a personal relationship with them. But like some residents I'd ask, like, do you feel like your program director supports you? Do you feel like you have a relationship with them? And one resident just kind of looks at me and is like, I get along really well with the associate program director. Like completely swerved. And to me, that was pretty telling.
Yeah,
I think of the culture.
I think that's funny, because a lot of times you're looking at what people are saying, and I think it's just as important, if not more important, to look at what people are not saying. I was talking with a attending psychiatrist at the hospital that I'm rotating at right now, just asking him about his residency, and what I've heard so far was awesome. And then I went to an open house and got interesting vibes from the program director. And then when I went back and asked the attending that I'm working with, like, hey, like I went to the open house for, you know, the residency program you were at, and it looks like they're pretty new. Like, how long did you have them? And he's like, oh, I only had them for like the last 2 years of my residency. But yeah, the residency program used to be very pro-resident, and now it might be pro-university or pro-hospital. And I think that is also very telling, because, you know, and I think program directors are in a tricky situation because they are working for both. But at the end of the day, I want to be with a program director that's looking out for me.
Yeah, I think I've been asked like this question, you know, like what's the biggest thing you look for in programs and whatnot. And it's like, it's so hard because, up to the point of your third and fourth year, I would say especially fourth year, you just like don't have a lot of exposure. Like you just don't have a lot of experiences, whether in your third year of medical school, if you're at a smaller or more community-based medical school, you're not getting a lot of exposure in big academic hospitals with lots and lots of programs. And even if you are at a more academic medical school, your clerkship rotations might just be at one hospital. And so at most, you're getting exposure to like one name of residency. And then in your fourth year, that's when you're actually traveling around. And so it's like you do have to form these important opinions or important factors pretty quickly. And so it's I think that's why it's super important. And I think I would advise any medical student to just go to conferences, go to like one or two conferences a year that allow you to like meet programs and talk with a lot of people in a relatively short amount of time, just so you can understand like what feel you get from programs and like what's important to you. Cause it's so hard during medical school to, you know, get enough exposure to actually form like good, solid, based opinions.
Yeah. I think go ahead, Austin.
No, please. After you.
Okay. I was going to say with that, you know, just trying to get as much exposure to different programs, different areas as you can. And that's hard sometimes when you don't have total control over your rotation schedule. But I think like our school offered an opportunity for students to go out to Brooklyn for a rotation or two. And I wanted to spend a month in New York. Who wouldn't? But I also wanted to see what medicine was like on the East Coast. And it was very different. The attending mm-hmm. style is totally different than what I saw here on the West Coast. So I think if you have opportunities like that and you're able to do it, I think you should take them.
I completely agree.
Did you feel like there was more of a hierarchy in that kind of setting as opposed to out here?
Definitely. It's just interesting comparing. And granted, it was a different specialty. I was doing internal medicine out there. And I think maybe internal medicine might also be inherently more hierarchy based. But yeah, the attendings made sure to let us know that they were the attendings and that they knew everything. And even the different residents are. Yeah, it was an interesting experience. I'm honestly glad I went because it did expose me to a whole different side of medicine that I hadn't seen before. But yeah, definitely more hierarchy based where I feel like, like the program I first did in a way at this year, it was very collaborative. Like the attending listen to the third and fourth year medical students and the intern, like what are they thinking? What do they have to say? And would take our thoughts into consideration.
Just another thought I was having though is I think right now, fourth year doing like audition sub eyes, filling out your application, your personal statement, all that. I think it's a time when we're especially susceptible to imposter syndrome. Weston, do you ever experience imposter syndrome?
Never. I'm ranked number one. I'm just kidding. I'm not ranked number one in our class. That would actually be hilarious. But no, I think it's interesting because like you come into medical school and you know, you think you know stuff, then you get slapped in the face and you feel like an imposter. And I feel like every single rotation, you feel like an imposter again. Like, even though I've done, I think by now, this is my fifth psychiatry rotation, I'm still like, I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. But you step back and you're like, okay, wait, I do know stuff. So I think it's a constant reminder. And I think, you know, even talking to residents, they're like, yeah, there's still times where I feel like I don't belong here, but we have to remind ourselves, we got this far, you know, schools let you in, residency programs let you in, like obviously you deserve to be where you are. And just be kind to yourself.
Yeah. I think what you mentioned about like just in rotations, when you observe residents, I think one of the biggest things I've taken away from my audition and or sub eye rotations, is that residency, the purpose of residency is to learn. Like, just like medical school is a time to learn, the purpose of residency is to learn how to be a doctor. Like, everyone, I think it's just interesting how sometimes, whether you're talking with people not in healthcare or unfamiliar with just medical school and the medical education journey, there's a lot of like, you know, everyone talks about their medical school, and I'm like, I don't think anyone learns anything in medical school, how to be a doctor. Like, it's all, you'll figure that all out in residency. Like, sometimes that's how I feel. And I've had to remind myself when I have like those same thoughts of, you know, kind of imposter syndrome. And we're talking about that. I've had to remind myself, like, look, I observe residents every day on my rotations, try and figure out how to care for patients in whatever manner. Like, I witness this every day, and attendings helping residents. And so it's like, I don't need, and I shouldn't know everything right now.
Oh yeah. Especially if you're on, you know, let's say you get like a month of OBGYN in medical school, there's no way you're going to know how to be an OBGYN by the end of that month.
Well, some of us get a month of OBGYN.
Next question.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. But
it's funny because the doctor I worked for prior to medical school, he was like, oh yeah, like everything I know now, I learned in residency. And so I'm like, wait, what's the point of medical school then? But I think the point of medical school is so you understand the basis of what you can be taught in residency.
Yeah, and the passports.
Yeah, I suppose. And to give people money that I don't have. But
yeah, it's great. I love having a house worth of education. It'll pay off. It'll pay off. It'll pay off.
It will.
It will pay off.
I think that kind of learning to identify positives in yourself is a learned skill like anything else. I don't think it's, I mean, some people are kind of more innately confident than others, but I think you can kind of learn to become confident, which is something I struggle with. I do remember on one of my internal medicine rotation, I was just really kind of beating myself up about like, oh man, I didn't know this. I didn't know like what the diuretic dosing for hyperkalemia or whatever it was. And like, obviously, why would I know that? Because I was a third year medical student, but I was just really struggling. And kind of towards the end of the day, the senior resident pulled me aside. And I was like, hey, I can kind of tell that you're beating yourself up a little bit and maybe expecting too much of yourself. And then he just kind of built me up and identified some of the things that I was doing well. And they were not things that I'd even considered that I was doing well. And I think that really helped me kind of see like objectively what it looks like what, when you're doing something well, sometimes it takes somebody else to see that, but I think you can learn to see that in yourself without becoming like arrogant. You know what I mean?
100%. I have two thoughts regarding that. One, I think one thing I plan to do moving forward, and I hope everyone does, is providing constant positive feedback. You know, even if they are struggling and you agree with that they're struggling, I'm sure there's something that they did well that day that you can compliment them on. I, you know, have now been able to work with third year med students, and it's so funny being on, you know, it's so funny being a wise fourth year, but I look at them and, you know, I see themselves beating up over stuff and I'm like, no, like you're doing great. Like, yeah, this is your third day of the psychiatry rotation. You're not expected to know anything. You're doing great. Second thought is I'm just going to throw in a plug for therapy and, you know, CBT, stuff like that, cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, recognizing that not all thoughts are healthy and helpful thoughts, and learning to recognize how those thoughts influence our behavior and our actions. And, you know, if we can catch those thoughts, and, you know, work on changing them, it'll take time. You know, you're not going to be an expert at positive self-talk overnight, but it's going to take time.
Yeah. Thank you for that plug. It's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the culture, the traditional culture of medicine and most healthcare fields, it's very cutthroat. It's very each year young. Like, that's the traditional culture. I feel like that's definitely changing, at least in my experience with programs now.
Oh yeah.
I have been really built up. And like I, after going to conferences, interacting with programs, after rotations, interacting with programs and residents and faculty, I've been shocked at how positive and how uplifting, you know, people above me in the hierarchy of medicine, how supportive and uplifting people have been. And it's been awesome because, you know, through medical school, just the imposter syndrome that most students experience is sometimes crippling and overwhelming, just because of the nature of medicine. You know, eventually you'll be taking care of people's lives and health. And it's very stressful. But I've been very grateful for some of the kind words and, some of the good criticism that I've received from other superiors above me.
Yeah, I would say forget the haters that give me feedback. I don't want to learn. I don't know. They're just trying to bring me down and they're toxic, but I'm perfect as is.
So true.
No, I 100% agree. Turns out I agree with people that I invite to be on a podcast with me. Who knew?
We call that groupthink, confirmation bias. I don't know. I don't know which one it is.
Both? I don't know.
Why not both?
I don't know. But I feel less bad about that because I think what we're saying is good advice.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. And I think it's something that, you know, I hope listeners remind themselves of. And even, you know, this conversation is reminding me to do those things.
Yeah. So it's true. So much easier to like build somebody else up and like compliment somebody else. And then when it's time to do the same for you, it's like, nope, I can't see anything good. So be kind to others and then maybe you'll get better being kind to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when I talk with patients who are having, you know, really poor thoughts about themselves or about their situation. One of the questions I like to ask is just, okay, what would you tell a friend going through this exact situation? Odds are you're not going to be mean to your friend about things. So, you know, try to talk to yourself like a friend, or how you would a friend or how your friend would talk to you, because odds are friends aren't going to say bad things to you, about you, to your face, about how you're doing in life. So I think, you know, that's a good reminder. Treat yourself how you treat others. And hopefully that's good.
Yeah. I like, as we close out the podcast, I think that's great advice to end on, is be your own best friend, especially as you go through, you know, a sometimes challenging and stressful medical journey. Be your own best friend.
Any final parting thoughts from either of you?
No, just thank you, Weston. Thanks for joining us and offering some really, really good advice and good wisdom. You're not just tall, you are wise.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going to be a great psychiatrist one day.
Yeah, come on down in 5 years. I can charge you for advice then. Until then, I'm handing it out for free.
As long as you can hook me up with an Addies, then we're going to be the best of friends.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good times. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Dr. Imposter. We're doing med school.
So can you.